See what I mean? First Nations and Pipelines. Introduction from a 1968 essay by farmer and poet Wendell Berry. We have lived by the assumption that what was good for us would be good for the world. And this has been based on the even flimsier assumption that we could know with any certainty what was good even for us. We have fulfilled the danger of this by making our personal pride and greed the standard of our behavior toward the world. We have been wrong. We must change our lives so that it will be possible to live by the contrary assumption that what is good for the world will be good for us. For I do not doubt that it is only on the condition of humility and reverence before the world that our species will be able to remain in it. Part one, Robert Davidson and the Trinag. In 1973, after a pleasant 3 weeks in our provincial prison, I was riding my bike down Burrard. It was summer 1973, and I had been caught on the border with 3 joints of marijuana. I pled guilty and went to jail. Once in Ocala, the provincial jail in Burnaby, I thought, well, if inside jail is this good, outside must be really, really good. And it is. This place is paradise. And we are all enlightened. We just aren't awake all the time to that fact. We not only respect the interdependent web of all existence, we are a part of it. We are interdepending. We are not only seekers of the way, we are the way. Or to make it a verb, we are weighing. We are doing the Tao, paving the path with our footsteps. So I was riding my bike down Burrard in 1973, and I saw this store called Images for a Canadian Heritage. I looked in the window and saw this beautiful print. I was brand new in town and didn't know anything about Haida art, but I knew what I liked. So on the spot, I bought this print called Raven and Fetus by Robert Davidson for $16. Welcome to Lotus Land. You can see the beak on the right side, the wing on the left side, and Robert Davidson, that was representing Raven, which was Robert Davidson's wife. She was in the Raven clan. And then she was pregnant with their first child, who was upside down inside. Now, there are 2 stories here. One is the death of my hometown, Detroit, now a vast ghost city. I was a refugee from Detroit. The other story is the rebirth of coastal First Nations, led by artists such as Robert Davidson and Susan Point, and political leaders such as Grand Chief Stuart Phillip. I'll continue this second story, the spiritual rebirth of coastal First Nations. Flash forward to the year 2004. By 2004, I knew that Robert Davidson was right up there with Bill Reed as a great coastal artist. So I went to an evening with Robert Davidson at the UBC Museum of Anthropology called The Abstract Edge. Davidson declared that he was not just a Haida artist selling trinkets to the tourists. He is an artist with a capital A, an international force of nature ready for New York, London, Tokyo, and Paris. On that night, Davidson had a new collection which used the Haida alphabet of shapes, myths, and heraldry, but deconstructed and rearranged with a 21st century global sensibility. Some pieces of this new collection featured an old shape with a new meaning, known in English as the trineg, or trinegative, because it was traditionally used as a three-pointed filler in negative space, in background, to add fluidity to the form lines, and to simply shape the foreground. So here there's three trinegs in different parts, but you don't notice them because they're in the background. In this new abstraction, the trineg, the three-pointed filler, is in the foreground and becomes the center. At that point, you can turn it off. At that point, I had a revelation. We colonizers, we settlers, based on our cultural history, had seen the so-called wilderness, the heathen, dark, pagan forest, as negative space, empty, devoid of Christian civilization, devoid of Europe, the only reality which made any sense to us. And the denizens of this emptiness were simply negative people, virtual zombies. Robert Davidson, by putting his trineg space filler into a positive space, showed me that what is foreground and what is background is simply a case of cultural perception. European Christians saw First Nations as empty, negative space, lacking our blessings and the salvation of our Bible. We settlers saw them as unsettled. But as First Nations broadcaster Candy Palmiter taught me, we are not settlers because when we arrived, it was already settled. We didn't settle anything. Likewise, whenever I see old Haida representations of white men, they look ridiculous. Not intentionally ridiculous, but the hats and beards are odd, as if they were copied but not understood. We were lacking Haida culture. We were negative space to them. We were the devoid and lacking savages. Lacking? No, ravenous for sea otter pelts for some weird reason. I mean, imagine Captain Vancouver and his crew sailing into so-called Burrard Inlet on June 12, 1792. If you were Musqueam, what would you think of this shaggy collection of Halloween freaks? Weird, ridiculous, uncivilized, un-everything, and therefore the negative background to your very clear and proper, very civilized foreground as a proud speaker of your beautiful Musqueam language? Hey, what's that thing on his head? A dead bird? And once they learned it was a wig, the questions just multiply. Why? A white powdered wig? Why? Seeing with a worldview. Thank you. You see, the physical photons emanating from George Vancouver on the deck of his ship are the same whether you are his first mate or a Musqueam warrior looking up to the ship's deck. The light reflecting off his costume is still the same when it reaches the eye of the random eagle circling overhead. But the meaning, my friends, the meaning of that visual information is completely different when processed by the brains of first mate, Musqueam warrior, or eagle. What do they see? Captain or devil? Friend or foe? Disgusting or maybe delicious? It's all up to which brain is interpreting what it sees. Because believe me, friends, vision is 60% what we expect to see and 40% what is out there. I repeat, vision is 60% what we expect to see and 40% what is out there. And that's why we have optical illusions. our biased brains just insist that our eyes must be wrong until proven otherwise. Usually we just categorize what doesn't make sense as simply wrong, and what does make sense as obviously right. And what's wrong or right is determined by our culture, our language, our fashion, popular history and mythology, our religion, confirmation bias, and sometimes by what we call our slow thinking, evidence and logic. Together, they make our Weltanschauung, our worldview. And worldviews don't appreciate tinkering or correction. For example, creationist versus evolutionary worldviews. Our brains are more stupid than we thought. But they're the only brains we've got. We are genetically determined to easily recognize thousands of human faces, but maybe 10 kinds of tree bark. That's why we have science, because our brains are species-specific and culturally biased. Our perceptions are oriented to our own species as foreground and all other species as background. Without science, we would all be stuck in Trumpian tribalism. Part 3, Kinder Morgan Pipeline. Now, what does any of this have to do with stopping the Kinder Morgan Pipeline? Well, it all depends on how you look at it. Does another oil sands pipeline mean development and jobs? Or does tar sands exploitation mean corporate colonization, plundering our common ground, killing our Mother Earth bit by bit by bit? It all depends on how you look at it, your Weltanschauung or worldview. A Musqueam elder known in English as Larry Grant attended a 2007 celebration of the 250th birthday of Captain George Vancouver. He said that many in his nation opposed his attending, but he said, "We Musqueam are generous to a fault." Indeed. I won't review the litany of smallpox, addiction, residential school cultural genocide, murdered and missing women and girls, which have maimed First Nations. I just want to point out the cumulative corporate colonialism represented by the industrialization of Burrard Inlet, the Fraser River, and the Salish Sea. Where is the free, prior, and informed consent to pollute this unceded native land? Where is the respect for the Tsleil-Waututh, clam beds, and the Musqueam fisheries, the Kaykite village below Front Street? Where is the invitation from First Nations to dredge Burrard Inlet for huge dilbit tankers? Who craves to turn British Columbia into Detroit? Colonization, extracting the last drop of wealth from the soil, is for the hubris of that Enron alumnus, Rich Kinder, and his billionaire buddies, no one else. I saw it in Detroit. Exploit it, suck it dry, trash it, and move on. I saw it in Houston, Richard Kinder's city with no zoning and a huge population suffering from asthma, cancer, and extreme poverty. We escaped. And now, here we are, on the edge of the Pacific. As the government of Canada celebrates 150 years of Confederation, what did Tsleil-Waututh Chief Dan George say 50 years ago at the 1967 Canadian Centenary? He said, "I lament for Confederation. When I fought to protect my land and my home, I was called a savage. When I neither understood nor welcomed his way of life, I was called lazy. When I tried to rule my people, I was stripped of my authority. And what did John A. Macdonald, our first prime minister, say about Indians? When the school is on the reserve, the child lives with its parents, who are savages. And though he may learn to read and write, his habits and training mode of thought are Indian. He is simply a savage who can read and write. It has been strongly impressed upon myself that Indian children should be withdrawn as much as possible from the parental influence, and the only way to do that would be to put them in central training industrial schools where they will acquire the habits and modes of thought of white men. 1879. My goal in terms of stopping the Kinder Morgan pipeline expansion project is to speak truth to power. Our Unitarian fourth principle encourages our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And this month, we are exploring on Sundays, we are exploring meaning in our lives. And our seventh principle is to respect the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part. My goal is to fulfill my vow to our son, Benjamin Perrin, and to his generation, that I will do everything in my power to prevent his premature death from global warming. Still, I know that in spite of doing everything in my power to prevent the collapse of civilization, our son's fate will be evident by 2030. And when I'm 85 in 2030, I will stop fighting climate change, and I will say to my son, in all humility, I did my best. I really tried to do my best. Right now, this year, in this place, I have an opportunity to prevent a major increase in greenhouse gases by stopping the Kinder Morgan pipeline expansion project. Professor Mark Jacquard of SFU determined the total greenhouse gases of a completed Kinder Morgan expansion, allowing for a maximum of 95% throughput and a realistic storage and shipping scenario. Jacquard estimated that the diluted bitumen would create the greenhouse gases of 20 million cars on the road every day. Burnaby Mountain, where I live, is the choke point for stopping 20 million cars worth of greenhouse gases. We will do our part to stop the insane expansion of the tar sands. If our atmosphere is going to plateau at 450 parts per million of CO2, the 2-degree maximum, and then come down, we need to drastically cut emissions right now. Last April, when I first wrote these words, I harbored some faint hope that the Paris Accord 2-degree maximum was still achievable. That ship has sailed. There's no room for expansion of the tar sands. Expansion of infrastructure for the tar sands is beyond stupid now. It's suicidal. That's not what our culture tells us. That's what science tells us. 5 years ago in the New York Times, climate scientist James Hansen said, "If Canada proceeds to exploit the tar sands and we do nothing, it will be game over for the climate." Game over for the climate. So where is this paradise I was talking about? How can I stand here and tell you that I have hope? Well, when we look at our history as Unitarians, we've been here before. The last time an ethical truth overcame an economic success was slavery, both in the British Empire and in the United States. We Unitarians were conflicted on slavery, as we are now conflicted on First Nations and pipelines. In the 1850s, the reluctant abolitionist Reverend Theodore Parker broke the law in order to shelter fugitive slaves in his home and church. We were conflicted in Selma, Alabama, when Unitarians Reverend James Reeb and Viola Liuzzo knowingly took the risk of being killed in order to actively support the emerging civil rights movement. They were murdered. What will it take to stop this crazy Kinder Morgan expansion? Listen to this Coast Protectors pledge, first proclaimed by Grand Chief Stuart Phillip at last November's Stop Kinder Morgan March. With our voice in the courts or the streets, on the water or the land, whatever it takes, we will stop the Kinder Morgan pipeline expansion. Over 22,000 of us have signed that pledge on the coastprotectors.ca website. Why? We are protecting our home from invasion with our First Nations brothers and sisters. We are protecting our children from global warming. We are fighting for sanity in an insane world, like those who fought nuclear weapons tooth and nail in the 20th century. We are fighting for our self-respect, to be smart, compassionate, grateful, and brave in the face of overwhelming odds. We've been here before, and we carry the torch forward to the future that we create. This here and now is paradise because we have the opportunity to create our future, because we have reverence for our children, because we have conviction in our values. And in spite of all our all too human brains and humble hearts, we will stand together in 2030 before our children and tell them in all humility, we did our best. That's all we can ask. We are trying to be brave. We are trying to be wise. We are trying to do our best. And may it be so, all my relations. So because we are out of time, we won't be doing the final hymn, the Fire of Commitment, and I'll ask